Hello and welcome to episode, I think, 4 of Shuffle the Pack podcast. My name's Gary. I am the Mr. Irrelevant of this podcast, and with me is James Wagstaff, the MVP of this podcast. How are we doing, James?
Yeah, not too bad. Again, another Packers performance to perk us up in as we await to go back into lockdown. So Lisa adding a bit of light relief at the moment, which is definitely needed.
Yeah, I am definitely not looking forward to another lockdown. I think another 5 months sit on my backside. As much as it would have been nice a year ago, haven't done it, not so keen on it again. Let's try and avoid that if we can as a nation. All right, so we'll just jump straight into it. Packers v Lions, 42-21. What a game.
Yeah, absolutely. This Packers offense seems like it's absolutely on fire. Everything that we hoped and when we dreamed that might be the case when Matt LaFleur was brought in as head coach last season, all this talk of newfangled schemes, motion, really seems to be sort of coming to the fore this season after sort of a year to bed in. Obviously, didn't do too bad in his first season, going 13-3, but you can really see his offense coming to life at the moment, and it really is a very, very exciting time to be a Packers fan at the moment.
Speaking of the offense, like last week, you and I both we sort of underplayed it a little bit. You know, you went for 30-17, I went for 33-17. We conceded a few more points than we were expecting, but the offense just blew us away, like 12 points each, above and beyond. Like, how good is that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was hard to sort of predict that they were going to go out and do similar to what they'd done from a points perspective prior to the game. I mean, a few stats that I saw sort of post-game, the 85 points that they scored is the most points that the Packers team have scored over the first two games since 1945. We're talking about a pretty serious whack of points when you're having to go back to sort of wartime last time that that many points were scored over the first two games of a season.
So, I mean, I don't think anyone else has been putting up as many points as we have in the last in the first two games. I think we're like a good 10, 15 points above anyone else's total at this point. Am I wrong? I mean, I don't know if you've got that stat to hand, but
I haven't got the exact stat, but yeah, about sort of 10 points I think, so above the Seahawks at this present time, sort of well in excess of anyone else in the league. I mean, the last two times that Rodgers has posted back-to-back 40-point games was between both his MVP seasons. Hopefully that's a little bit of foreshadowing for what's to come, but it's certainly very good stats at the moment coming out from the Packers' perspective.
Well, the history obviously indicates that we are going for another MVP season from Aaron Rodgers. And what does MVP mean? It means, you know, we're going to probably win the Super Bowl. I'm putting the marker down now. I think I might change my week one prediction at that point. Speaking of Rodgers, 240 yards, two touchdowns, took a sack, but the rest of the offense, amazing, no?
Yeah, I mean, from a Rodgers perspective, obviously in week one, he was absolutely lights out, one of the best performances in a long time. But this week, he was much more sort of considered. He did what he needed to do, took what the defense offered him throughout the game, didn't go off because he didn't need to, is the simple part of it. He had Aaron Jones, who was an absolute monster on the day, accounted for 236 all-purpose yards, which was actually the most by a Packers player in nearly 64 years. So again, some really incredible stats coming out of yesterday's game. Yeah, he did more than enough, Rodgers, from a production standpoint. But no, he definitely let Aaron Jones and the rest of the offense sort of take this week as their week.
We've got to get Aaron Jones paid now, surely. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of the salary cap or anything like that. But if he's able to rush for 160 yards and use the rest in what did he get? He got three touchdowns over the weekend. He needs to be getting that money, doesn't he?
Yeah, three total touchdowns. He actually led the team in receiving, partly because Devontae Adams was sort of in and out of the game with sort of an ankle and a hamstring injury. But even still, he led the team in rushing and receiving. Three touchdowns following on from the 20 or so touchdowns he scored last season. You thought, well, there's no way he's going to repeat that. But after 2 weeks, he's got four. So he's well on pace to actually go and beat his record from last season. So not saying that he will keep up this pace, but it's certainly very impressive from Aaron Jones, and really working towards getting that payday, really.
Yeah, it's not like it's not deserved either. Obviously, you touched there on Devontae Adams having the small hamstring injury. He still managed to get 36 yards for three catches, which is it's nothing I'd be ashamed of. Do you know what I mean? Because I think he only did a quarter and a half, something like that.
Yeah, as I say, he's in and out of the game. I mean, if you base on form of his game against the Vikings, you probably could have believed 36 catches. But no, unfortunately, he was sort of in and out with the ankle and the hamstring. I think from an injury perspective, it didn't look too serious. He was never taken into to the locker room. He was on the sideline throughout the game. And I think that had the game not been as in hand as it was, sort of late in the third into the fourth quarter, I think he probably would have been able to come back on the pitch. Or, so I think that probably for the best, I think there was a sort of damage limitation. He's clearly got a bit of a niggle there. Hamstrings are notoriously sort of niggly and you don't want to mess around with them. So I think it was just sensible from the Packers to sort of keep him out, just to protect that as much as possible, really.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I watched the second half of the game and he was on the sidelines and you can see he was constantly trying to stretch it out as if he wanted to come back on, which is good because it shows he's got that sort of hunger, you know. But while he was off, like Lazard, MVS, they had a good couple of catches. Although I will say MVS, as a downside, he did have like butterfingers yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the book on MVS. He'll make two or three wow plays each week. You think, wow, this guy's really sort of getting a real chemistry with Rodgers. And then he'll drop one or two simple passes and it's very frustrating. If he could just clean up that side of his game, he could be a really, really good asset for this Packers team alongside Monte. I thought that yesterday, obviously, the Packers scored 42 points. They actually, again, similar to week one, left a fair few points out there, I think. There was a number of drops from not just MVS, but Lazard had a drop. We had Sternberger had two drops. So there's a lot of drives that really could have stalled. Rodgers had all day. The pass protection really was very solid, considering that line's been very in and out in terms of personnel throughout this season. He had he had one sack, but outside of that, he had pretty much all day to throw, similar to week one. So you do have to wonder what these scores might have been had a couple of these catches gone to hand throughout both week one and two.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like just mentioning the defense there. Like it's like last week and this week, there's obviously been a problem with concentration. I think like going behind early in both games. Obviously, the end of the Vikings game last week was not classic Green Bay, shall we say? Do you think that's something that could be coached, or is it because of the personnel changes?
From a defense perspective, I mean, they started the game truly awful. There's the only way you can describe it. Off the first two line drive, two simple touchdown drives with very little resistance from the Packers D, and actually marked five straight touchdown drives allowed by the D at that point. So as the Lions led 14-3 at the end of the first half, as I say, five straight drives starting in Minnesota and finishing up the end of the first quarter had all gone for touchdowns for the opposition. So that was a stat that they needed to break. They got a bit of fortune with the Lions getting a big penalty and Jai Alexander getting a stop second quarter. And from that point, the defense did seem to turn a corner. They found a bit more consistency. I've got to give props to a few players out there. I thought Rashawn Gary, who we sort of briefly mentioned last week, as having a decent role. He had probably his best game yet, as I think, in a Packers. He had 1.5 sacks, and he also had the pressure that led to Stafford throwing it into Chandon Sutherland's hand for the pick six. So, I mean, it's really exciting if he continues to produce like this alongside both Preston and Zadarius. That is probably one of the meaner sort of D lines that any team's going to face. So that's very, very exciting. And again, Chandon Sullivan, he obviously, we had the pick six. He had a couple of pass breakups. He was really all over the place on the field. So you've got to give props to him. Very exciting to see what he could potentially do this season as well.
Yeah, no, there's an awful lot of exciting players. I can't wait for us to be back at full strength. I'm just looking at the profootballreference.com injury list. It looks like we've got 13 players out, plus Devin Funchess, who obviously opted out for COVID this year. But I mean, we're looking at DeGuara, he's a rookie, but Kenny Clark, St. Brown, Adams is on here, even though it's more of a like questionable niggle or whatever. Tyler Irvin's out with a concussion. But I mean, when all these players come back, if they're all healthy all year, it's hard to look past us for, at the very least, the conference championship game, I think.
Yeah, it's certainly shaping up nicely. It's been a really enjoyable 2 weeks of Packers football at this point. Just, I mean, last season it was lovely that they were winning so much, but they were pulling out games real close games, which were going down to the wire. These first two games, have you seen a different side to this Packers team, where they've really seemed to have taken a bit of a step on offense? It seems that Rodgers has bedded in. He's not always going for those Hollywood plays, sort of 50 yards downfield. He is taking what's on offer, and that's really good to see. And it does show genuine growth within the system. So, quietly optimistic. Obviously, got a huge game upcoming this week, which I think will really be a good measuring stick against the Saints. Where we truly are. Obviously, it's early in the season. We don't know how far this Vikings and Lions team are going to go. They could well be bottom dwellers, and it could all be a bit of a smokescreen, which often happens at the start of the season. But I'm quietly optimistic at this point, and it's certainly very exciting.
So you mentioned New Orleans there. Now, obviously, we're recording this a couple hours before their second game against the Raiders, so we can't. It's probably going to be harder to judge how we'll do against them, considering they played the Bucs last week. But Breeze, I don't think he's looking particularly clever this season, though. He only threw 160 yards last week against the Buccaneers.
Yeah, it's certainly not going to be made any easier at the moment. Obviously, Michael Thomas is set to miss tonight's game, which is undoubtedly going to sort of have an impact. He was his Mr. Dependable last season. Obviously, set the NFL record for receptions in a season. So he's as consistent as they come, and a massive minus point for their offense not being involved. Fingers crossed. You never want to wish injury, but hopefully that niggle sustains, so he can probably miss out on week three as well against the Packers. But from a Breeze perspective, he is getting on in years, and as they say, father time is undefeated. But at some point, you think that he's going to catch up on him, whether or not it was just one bad week against a pretty decent Bucks defense remains to be seen. And I think that based on the Raiders showing in week one, their defense isn't all that, so they might have a good bounce back. We have to see after tonight's game, really.
I mean, yeah, you mentioned the Raiders there again. I thought they were, as you said, the defense was fairly porous last week, but I thought their offense was really good. The New Orleans D didn't really impress me too much last week. And I mean, apart from Kamara, I don't really see a lot about them. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if I might watch a different game to you. I don't know, you know. But yeah, I can't really see us losing this if they don't have. If we can keep Alvin Kamara quiet, but I mean, how do we do that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, one of the focuses throughout this season and obviously into last season has been the run defense without Kenny Clark, which, by all accounts, there's a good chance he might miss the game against the Saints as well, which will be a big loss on that D-line to not have that sort of presence up the middle. But I don't know. New Orleans, they've been so consistently good over the last few seasons, and still, admittedly, there'll be no fans there, but going into the Dome is never an easy game. I say I think it really will be a good measuring stick. I very much hope that we can go in there and get the W, because I think that will really put the league on notice. But I'm not counting my chickens yet. On my early season predictions, I had put down an L in this column, and I hope I'm wrong. But yeah, it remains to be seen. I'll be interested to see how the Saints get on this evening, though.
So I think, just touching on what you said a minute ago there, the Saints in the Dome without the fans, that's going to be the most interesting, because we mentioned it about the Vikings in Minnesota in week one. But I mean, this is like a totally different ball game. Do you know what I mean? You saw it against was it Rams a couple of years ago, and Jared Goff just couldn't hear a single thing that was being said to him in his microphone. You know, like, his actual photos of him, and this is going to make great audio, but even covering his ears. Do you think, because Rodgers is so good with the cadence, do you think that's gonna affect it? Is it not really gonna matter too much if it's because the crowd noise is piped in every stadium, as far as I know. So if it's piped in, will that Dome make much of a difference to the recording of that? Or?
By all accounts, the stadium, the noise is pumped in just to make it a bit more realistic, but it's still very, very quiet in comparison to an actual game day stadium, particularly some of these louder stadiums such as the Superdome. I think without a doubt it's an advantage, particularly to Rodgers, who, as I say, as you mentioned, with his cadence is historically good at getting teams to jump offside. It's certainly going to be an advantage that we wouldn't typically expect to have, sort of open the season with two very tough on paper road games at two of the louder stadiums in the league and both be without fans is certainly played into the Packers' hands without a doubt. But having said that, as I say, this Saints team from top to bottom, sort of offense and defense, is pretty stacked. So that's one factor in their favor, but they're still going to have to do an awful lot, I think, to come out there with W.
Are you bold enough to put a number on the game yet, or put a score down?
I want to see how the Saints get on to tonight, to be honest with you. Obviously, see if there's any injuries, but the number of injuries this week, God knows who's going to actually be playing by the time we get to the game next week. So I'll see how they come out of that game, and then, yeah, obviously make a prediction perhaps a little bit later in the week. But at the moment, unfortunately, leaning towards the Saints, but very much hope I'm wrong.
So what we'll do then on a more personal note outside of this podcast is we'll text each other the prediction scores after tomorrow, so we have a vague idea of what we've said, and we can write that down to keep up this on-running game we've got going on. That'd be nice, you know, just so we can keep that going. You mentioned the injuries around the league as well. Like, what is going on this week? There's at least, definitely Nick Bosa, definitely Saquon Barkley out with season-ending ACL injuries, and there's just like a whole list of other ones that have just popped up as well. What's going on with all that?
Yeah. Team has got any at this point in the team at time, I'd be surprised. I mean, I took Saquon Barkley, so my season is done. I've got Cortland Sutton, who's also out for the season. Nice. I don't think I've ever in my time following the sport remember one week where the amount of injuries and the star players that have gone down all in one week has happened. As I say, I mean, injuries are part and parcel of the sport, and it's something you come to expect. But the number of injuries, I mean, just the 49ers in one game lost both Nick Bosa and Solomon Thomas to sort of suspected ACL injuries. Jimmy Garoppolo left with an ankle. Raheem Mostert left with a knee. I mean, that's five key players for that Niners squad who could be missing sort of substantial time. Others, which, you know, that's it. Was season changing ultimately just on one game week, and that's not to mention all of the other names throughout the league who went down.
Yeah, no, definitely. So like, obviously you said there that it's five starting star players as well for the 49ers are just like out for the season effectively. Does that mean that their season is done? Well, I suppose it kind of depends on how long Mostert and Jimmy G are out for, no? Because if they're only out for like a couple of weeks, it's not the end of the world. But if they're out for 6-7 weeks, there as well, just trying to use it as a rebuilding season, surely.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I saw a stat earlier today where the 49ers record under Kyle Shanahan when they got Garoppolo in at QB is around the sort of 0.800 mark. So 80% of their games that they're winning. When he's not in, it's down as low as sort of 30% of their games. So you can just see the drop-off just without him under Kyle Shanahan. Now, Raheem Mostert, I believe, is a mild MCL sprain. So you'd imagine that's probably going to be sort of 1-2 weeks, probably maybe 3 max, until he's back in the lineup. Garoppolo, not a lot has come out of it, but apparently that one wasn't as serious. So you have to see how they go for the next few weeks. But losing both, yeah, Thompson and Thomas and Bosa off the D-line is going to really sort of massively change the makeup of that squad. You certainly feel more confident about the Packers going in there and playing that side now, sort of minus Bosa and Thomas, than you did previously.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like two massive losses for them. But I mean, there's a theory that it could be something to do with the turf at MetLife, because obviously they're against the Jets this week, lost their 5 players, but they have to go back to play the Giants at MetLife again next week. I don't know if the 49ers asked the league to look at the surface or if the league have just done it as a matter of course, but. So it's like if there is an issue with the turf, what happens? Do they just keep playing? Do they have to relay the turf like overnight effectively, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, by all accounts, I was sort of having a look into this, that the turf was only relayed about 3 weeks ago at MetLife, because I mean, we've been playing there for a number of years and there's never been historically a problem of particularly poor turf. So whether or not they sort of bite the bullet and say, actually, we're going to have to sort of change this, because clearly there is an issue. If the NFL are willing to actually look into it, something must not be right. it's a tough draw for the Niners having to play their back-to-back weeks, having suffered so many injuries. I mean, the players are going to be dreading it all week when they've seen some of their sort of best players all get injured. They're going to be half a step slower. You must think they're going to be going sort of full speed, I imagine, because they're so worried about getting injured.
Yeah, I can only imagine that from a player's perspective, going back to where the site of where half your team's been wiped out, if you're one of the ones that gets injured in the following game, or if like your next superstar gets wiped out, then that you're just going to concede the season mentally, you know? Like, you'll just be sitting there going, well, that's it then. We're out of the game for 3-4 weeks, so we might as well just take it a bit easier. We'll just come third in the division and see what happens.
Yeah, no, as I say, I mean, there really was some season-changing injuries yesterday, and obviously the news is still filtering through about how serious those injuries are going to be. But I think when we look back at this season in sort of a few weeks' time, a few months' time, this will be the week that people circle and said, well, this was a real game-changer in terms of the fortunes of different teams. And just goes to show you how sort of futile an NFL season can be. You're flying high one week and then suddenly you can lose your starter at QB and a couple of other positions and your season can be doomed. So, yeah, it's been a sobering week from an injury perspective.
Yeah, I mean, we say all that, but I mean, the 49ers still did win the game. But I mean, like, take that with a pinch of salt because it was the Jets. But obviously, the NFC West is a tough division, so you can only assume that the Cardinals, who are playing really, really well, are looking at these injuries and just like rubbing their hands together. They're probably going to be like, I thought they would have been an outside pick for a playoff. I reckon their case has got a lot stronger this week.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from a Niners perspective, you've got now three teams in that division who are all gone 2-0 over their first two games. You've lost all these players. It's going to be a bloodbath, that division, as we mentioned earlier in the week. And it really is a tremendous division, talent-wise. It will be exciting to see who comes out on top. But no, it's going to be it's only 2 weeks in and they're 1-1. But it seems like a big task for that Niners team, particularly if they can't pick up a few wins with Nick Mullins in at QB over the next few weeks to keep pace with sort of Seattle, the Rams and the Cardinals.
Speaking of the Seattle there, did you see any of the game from last night, the Seattle against the Patriots game?
What a game that was.
I know.
Jeez. I mean, it was almost poetic that a game between the Seahawks and the Patriots comes down to the 1 yard line with a play with no time left, mirroring the Super Bowl. Except they went for the run this time and they still didn't get in. It was beautiful to watch. I mean, it was a quality game. Cam Newton, how he's on veteran minimum when he looks as good as he does, and how teams like the Bears wouldn't give him a flyer, it really does sort of smack to how Belichick seems to have done so well for so long, is he'll take a gamble where other teams won't, and he always seems to have the last laugh because, yeah, Cam Newton looks shit. And, well, how good does Russell Wilson look this season? Wow.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like, you mentioned there that the Bears, for example, could have picked up Cam Newton for an absolute song, but they paid, was it $20 million to Nick Foles or something daft like that?
And a fourth round pick.
Yeah, I mean, like, you might as well give him the whole bloody stadium or something. There's just no chance of that's such a poor signing. Like, yeah, Jaguars have been laughing all the way to the bank for that.
100%. Ryan Pace has had his absolute pants taken down by Jacksonville. They've taken on a huge salary of a middling starter at best, QB, who they've now sort of riding the bench. All the meanwhile, they could have had Jameis Winston or Cam Newton for a million, absolute pennies comparatively to what some backups in the league get paid. These are guys who've got sort of genuine starter experience, particularly Cam Newton. He won an MVP and has gone to a Super Bowl, for God's sake. So, no, it's quite funny because that.
It's just it's just a little bit upsetting that he's gone to the Patriots, because it just feeds into the evil empire idea, you know, like somehow Belichick is just in control of the whole thing, but he just pulls it out of the bag every single year. Because how many years have they had like the pick 30, 32 in the draft, you know?
Yeah.
It's fascinating, and he's always finding the players for it.
Yeah, he's playing sort of chess while everyone else is playing check. as it seems most of the time. He'll take that gamble where other teams won't. Obviously, he doesn't always get it right, as you saw with Mo Sanu, who they obviously recently let go. But when he does hit it, he really hits it. I mean, if Cam Newton keeps playing like they are now, it seems like they're a lock to make the playoffs. I mean, they were unlucky, you'd say, last night. Got it all the way down to the one with the game in hand. They could have come out with a W then and been 2-0. It'll be an interesting race to see out of them and the Bills and top of that division. But obviously they keep on winning. That's just the Patriot way, isn't it, these days?
Well, so you go back to them just like constantly pulling just draft picks out of the bag. Like even though they're most sort of the infamous Tom Brady 6th round pick. Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you even do that?
It's a madness that they've had some really, really sort of good drafts over the years. And as you say, to continually build championship caliber squads when you're picking 32nd, 31st, 30th year out just goes to show to what an absolute sort of Belichick is and has been over the years.
Makes you sick a little bit, doesn't it? You know? Right, should we have a shall we have a look at the NFC North as a whole? So at the minute, it's Packers, Bears, Vikings, Lions.
Yes. So obviously, thus far, Packers perfect. 2-0 within the division, which is always nice to see. I tweeted it out immediately following the game, but Matt LaFleur is now 8-0 against the NFC North, taking over as head coach. So can't ask for better than that. It was nice to beat your closest neighbours and to be doing that consistently since he take over is very, very good. Obviously, Bears somehow 2-0 as well with Mitch Trubisky. No one was predicting that before the start of the season. I don't know if you caught much of the Giants-Bears game, but they hung on very on that the Giants had lost Barkley to an ACL injury. I think Shepherd went on the pick. I don't think they're a real sort of 2-0 team. I don't think most people agree. And if any of the teams, to be honest with you, in the division were to be 2-0 at the moment, they're the team I'd be least concerned about as a Packers fan. So I think we can easily beat them both home and away later in the season. So I don't think they're much of a challenge. Obviously, both other teams 0-2, which is good. It means we've got a two-game advantage plus the head-to-head win against both of them, both Lions and Vikings at this point in time. So, I don't know if you saw much about Kirk Cousins' performance yesterday.
All I saw was that he was terrible. That seems to be the general consensus, is he's not a high-caliber quarterback anymore, shall we say. There's a rumour going around that they might be quietly tanking for one of the either Fields or Trevor Lawrence.
I mean, it's surprising, obviously, coming into the season. I would have personally set back them to be sort of run the Packers close after, obviously, a pretty horrible opening day going against us. And then to go on the road to the Colts and lose, it's not necessarily the worst result. The Colts are a pretty decent squad, sort of top to bottom. But to lose in the manner that they did, I think Cousins, he threw three picks and only 113 yards. There is serious question marks about that offense outside of Thielen. Truly an awful, awful performance. That's the guy you look to lead you and to go in there and only throw. I mean, that would be by far and away Rodgers' worst ever performance if he was to do that. And that's why I'm glad that we don't have Cousins as that QB.
Can you imagine? That would be shambolic. Right, so looking ahead, obviously Packers have got the Saints next Monday. Bears are against Falcons, Vikings against Titans, and the Lions against Cardinals. We could probably write off the Lions game because the Cardinals are 90% going to beat them. Vikings-Titans might be quite close, but I think the Titans will edge it. And the Bears-Falcons could go either way after the Falcons' shambolic display on Sunday night there.
Yeah, I mean, the Falcons, they really know how to lose a game that you think there's literally no way you can lose. Obviously, everyone remembers the Super Bowl, but if you highlights of yesterday's game against the Cowboys, you just wonder how on earth they managed to lose that game, obviously being up. So I think they were up sort of 20-0 at the end of the first quarter and then to come and lose. And even with sort of 5 minutes to go, I think the win percentage at that point was 98% Falcons were going to win, and this was 5 minutes left, and somehow, some way, the Cowboys managed to storm back. I think they scored four consecutive touchdowns in the fourth quarter just to bring the game close. But then they still needed to rely on an onside kick, which they somehow managed to convert before Greg Deleg comes on and gets the game winner. It was an incredible game. But if you're a Falcons fan, you've got to think that Dan Quinn's time is up. He's supposed to be a defensive coach, and he can't coach a defense to save his life at this point.
It's just snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. You know what I mean? It was something else to watch. It was quite funny from an outsider's perspective, but I can imagine if you're a Falcons fan, you're close to tears. You know, you're having flashbacks to the Super Bowl and thing, you know. With that in mind, have you got an MVP for the week?
MVP for this week, I would say, I mean, it's hard to look past Russell Wilson. He did throw a pick six against the Pats, but then he did also throw to five touchdowns. Not many players in Bill Belichick's coaching career have thrown five touchdowns. So I'd probably give it to Russell Wilson this week. What about yourself?
I'd probably argue Justin Herbert. He didn't know he was even playing until 5, 10, 15 seconds before kickoff, and all of a sudden he's starting. Didn't have enough time to get nervous and held the Super Bowl champions and Patrick Mahomes to overtime, and they had to score three 53, 58-yard field goals to actually win the game. I would argue, considering this is his first start, he has to be the MVP for this week.
I do wonder about that. I mean, it was certainly very dastardly from the Chargers, but I do wonder if they did actually plan for him to start all along, and they wanted to sort of keep the Chiefs as off guard as possible, as they prepared all week for Tyrod. And then at the last minute, they obviously made the old switcheroo. I don't know if you heard the radio call from the announcers, the Chargers guys, when Herbert came on the field. They were very, very surprised. It's quite a funny audio clip just because of how surprised they were that he was playing.
I didn't hear that. I'll look it up after this. But I think even if there was some sort of underhanded, sort of like Dick Dastardly level tactics from Anthony Lynn, then I still think that Herbert played really well considering his first start against what is quite an intimidating Chiefs defense. And obviously being up against Patrick Mahomes in arguably one of the best players of the last 3 years.
No doubt. I think that he's certain. I don't think that he'll come out of the starter spot now. I think he showed in one game, comparatively to Tyrod, his upside is so much higher. I think he was certainly impressive from a rookie angle. I don't think he's quite... I mean, we've almost forgotten about Joe Burrow on Thursday Night Football. It feels like about a week ago almost, but his performance was also highly impressive. Obviously, he didn't get a W, but still a very, very... impressive performance from a rookie.
I was all right with Joe Burrow not getting the W on Thursday night because I had money on Browns actually winning, and I came away with a thick end of 150 quid. So I'll take that. You know, he can win his next game. That's all right. You know,
yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we'll get some anyway.
Exactly. Some will turn up eventually. You know. What about your Mr. Irrelevant of the week? Because I can't see past Dan Quinn and the entire Falcons defense.
That's a very, very fair call, given that given what they don't say. The only one I would argue is Adam Gase. I mean, we spoke obviously at length about the number of players the Niners lost to injury this week, and to get not only lose the game, which is pretty embarrassing anyway, when the opposition of losing so many key players, but to get sort of thrashed in a game where the opposition have lost so many key players, the piece de la resistance of the Adam Gase era up to this point, I must admit. I don't know if you saw the 3rd and 33, and they gave it up. So they were on 3rd and 33, and the running back gets 55 yards upfield and gets the first down. If you can't get a stop on 3rd and 33, and you lose it on a run, you've got to go.
So how long until Adam Gase is the head coach of the Falcons? End of the year? End of the month? End of the week?
I think they'll give him longer. If obviously NFL, they typically have a much longer leash than you tend to see in football here in the UK. I think that a lot of these coaches would go a lot quicker. But I think I'd be surprised if we get to Thanksgiving and either Dan Quinn or Gase are still in charge of their respective teams.
So if either of those goes, where do you think the Falcons and the Jets will recruit from? Is there anyone who's out of a job? Do you think the Jets are going to top up with Freddie Kitchens or something from last season's Browns?
I don't know if they want to going to the out of the frying pan into the fire with another sort of lousy head coach. I mean, if it was me and I was looking to hire a head coach, I can't think why anyone is not sort of looking after Eric Bieniemy, the current Chiefs offensive coordinator. He's had a few head coaching jobs, sort of. Well, he's had interviews, but he's never actually managed to get the big chair himself. I think he would be sort of top of my list if I was recruiting for a new head coach at the moment.
What about Spagnoli at the Chiefs, the defensive coach?
Yeah, I mean, anyone coming out of that Chiefs staff is coming up smelling of roses at this point in time, given how obviously off the back of a Super Bowl, they both coached exceptionally well. I think that both of them realistically have a good shot at getting a head coaching gig in the not-too-distant future.
What about Matt Patricia at the Lions? Just while we're talking about people on the hot seat, he's got to be close. He has to be a whisper away from looking at the doll queue.
I mean, my preference would be he stays for a long, long time.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'd make the case that Patricia is the perfect man for the job. And
I'd pay his salary myself if I could, you know.
But, again, I think we've seen all we need to see from the Matt Patricia Lions. They are what they've been throughout his tenure. They don't seem to be making any tangible progress at this point in time. As with yesterday, they started out the game very, very, very well. Obviously, got up to a 14-3 lead against the Packers. But just they can't finish games. That's been the indictment throughout his run. He did it twice against the Packers last year, and they just can't finish. And that's coaching, ultimately speaking. That is what coaches are there to do. They are to give you that little X factor that gets you across the line, ultimately speaking. And that's where they're distinctly lacking, I think.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Like he just seems to be, he's like a three-quarter coach. He can do well or do okay for three quarters, but that like he, in some game, one of the quarters will absolutely let him down and he's got nothing to back him up, as far as I can tell. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how good he was as a positional coach at the Patriots, I think it was. But he's there's nothing for me to say Patricia's actually any worth his salt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I say, he was the DC, obviously, for a long time with the Patriots. And again, similar to both the Chiefs coaches, you obviously come out looking very good when you're in a team that consistently wins. Now, how much of that defense really was Bill Belichick and how much was Matt Patricia has probably been shown over the course of the last sort of seasons as Patricia has consistently produced a loser with the Lions, and their defense has been very mediocre at best over that time. So you'd probably say that Bill Belichick was more responsible for those great Patriots defense, particularly as Matt Patricia seems keen on bringing in every possible free agent from New England that possibly could be, and they still can't recreate the magic.
Well, that's just more like Bill Belichick theories, isn't it? Like he's got his finger in every single pie. He's the general manager. He's the head coach. He's probably the defense coach, the offense coach. He's just everything. You know, he just has other people to sort of like pass on his exact orders. He even has his we touch on nepotism there with his son on the coaching staff. He's just going to do what daddy says, I think. You know, I can't see, is it Steve Belichick doing much in the future?
Yeah. When you've won as much as he does, I'd listen to what he had to say, to be fair. I mean, he's clearly knows what he's doing, and so you'd be a fool to pick against the Patriots making a deep run in January this season again.
Yeah, I mean, that would be deeply upsetting on a personal level, because I just can't find myself finding anything redeemable about the Patriots, apart from I quite like the way they've set up. Like, they've almost completely changed from being a system with Tom Brady, who can only be a system, to being a bit more fluid with Cam Newton. I like the adaptability that they've shown. Apart from that, they're just the Patriots. I just don't like them.
I mean, this is similar to United back in the sort of early 2000s. If you weren't a United fan, you hated them just because of the out-and-out success. Obviously, with the Patriots, you've got all the scandal that have come along with the dynasty as well, with numerous potential cheating elements in there, which has led to this really just undesirable feeling around them, which is shared by most fans around the league, myself included. But you almost begrudgingly have to respect the amount of success they've had, and to be that consistently good for that long, as we mentioned, they must be doing something right, whether or not, or something wrong in the case of all of the cheating. But
go get your digs in there a little bit, aren't you, James?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. Have we missed anything? I think we've been a pretty comprehensive little coverage there, haven't we? I mean, we might have been a little bit tight on the actual game next week, but that's because we don't know what they've done this week.
Yeah. I'll say we'll obviously try and get some sort of preview content out a bit later in the week, potentially, just to preview the game. Be interesting to see how the Saints get on, so we can get a proper in-depth look at that team. We've only obviously got 60 minutes of game film on them up to this point, so very intrigued to see how they get on tonight. Obviously excited for the game. I think it's going to pit two teams that are very likely to be up there in terms of the seeding for the NFC playoffs this season, if the season continues form. So it could be a huge game sort of towards the back end of the season from a seeding perspective. Obviously, only one team gets a bye this season for the playoffs, and we, as we've seen historically speaking, those buys are really invaluable making a deep run. So although it's only week three, it already feels like a potentially massive game, so I'm very looking forward to it.
I'm in two minds about staying up to watch at least the first half, because it starts at what, 1:30 or something in the morning. I'm awake all night anyway, do you know what I mean? I'm a weirdo like that, so I might stay awake and try and get a little bit of film for myself. But I mean, to be honest, at that time of night, there's no point, because I don't know what I'm watching. Do you know what I mean? It could be anything, because I'm just knackered. But I can't see myself finishing the game, because it'd be like 4:30 in the morning finish, and that's, I will work tomorrow. It's a bit, yeah, bit of a stretch for me to do.
Mine will be a game pass, catch up in 40 minutes thing, and it's sort of tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon, slack off work for a little bit and try and catch the game, and then obviously come on, Madison. Obviously, prepare myself for next week, when I'll be sort of staying up all night to watch the Packers, and I'll deal with the lack of sleep for the next 2 weeks. So obviously, we've got this game against the Saints, and then we've also got the Falcons game, which is also a middle of the night job. So it's going to be sort of two weekends where Monday's not going to be too fun.
Red Bulls followed by sleeping tablets. Yeah,
I reckon so.
Yeah. All right. In that case, then, I think that's probably about us for the week. Unless you've got anything that we've missed.
Oh, I think we've touched on most bases. Say, very exciting. Some really good games across the league this week. As I say, injuries probably the biggest message. Packers still look, offense looking absolutely fire, which is great to see. Other than that, no, I'll sign off. Obviously, wish everyone a good week, and perhaps a bit later on with some content prior to the game.
Yeah, excellent. All right. On that note, anyone who's listening, you can follow us at ShufflePack on Twitter, or you can email us at shufflepackpodcast@gmail.com. I'll get it right this week. I got it wrong last week. My name's Gary. I'll say goodbye. Goodbye, James.
See you later. And yeah, if anyone does have any questions or for the pod, do let us know. Just fire us a message on Twitter, DM, that sort of thing. And we'll get some answers out.
All right, go pack, go.
Go pack, go.